Second hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game in Nashville, app from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Joe Rex Road, Adam Vingan in this week for Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezovic, and intern Hanley all in today. And before we get into this, I think, really interesting Titans discussion, I'd like to give a pair of tickets away.
Yes, you would, Rex Road.
What do you think about that, huh? How you like them apples? All right. Pair of tickets to the Pilgrimage Festival, September 24th to 25th at the park at Harlansdale Farm in Franklin. Artists include Chris Stapleton, Brandi Carlile, the Avett Brothers. Yeah. John Batiste, and more. I know Better Than Ezra is part of the More. They should be listed, not just More. Better Than Ezra. Was jamming that song good? You guys know the song?
Yes.
Jamming that yesterday. So caller number...
Let's do four.
We'll get these tickets to the Pilgrimage Festival. All right, Adam. Let's talk Titans. This is something you brought, and I really like this topic. And it's interesting. And let's start it with, first of all, this idea that I often dismiss, often make fun of, sometimes really can't stand, but will never go away. And honestly, this year, I think there's going to be some merit to it. This idea that there's, I don't know if it's bias against the Titans, but certainly that they are perennially overlooked, underrated, not respected as they should be in NFL circles. First of all, your thoughts on that in general?
You're dangerously close to the Bobo line when you talk like that, as our friend Jared would say. It's an interesting question just because, you know, the Titans have been in the regular season and, of course, in the postseason a few years ago, you know, have been among the better teams in the NFL record-wise, I would have to imagine. I'd be curious for your opinion. If you just take Ryan Tannehill's time as quarterback of the Titans, they were 2-4, correct, in 2019?
They were.
They lost at Denver. And
an absolute nightmare of a football game to watch, yes.
And the Titans made the quarterback switch from Marcus Mariota to Ryan Tannehill. So if you take the Titans' regular season record from that point, so I guess week 7 of the 2019 season through now, do you think they're a top 5, top 10 record team in the NFL?
That's a good question. Maybe. Well, let's see. So now you're making me have to remember things. But obviously they finished that year 7-3
mm-hmm.
to go 9-7 to get in, right? I think that's right. And then last year they're 12-5. In between, my goodness, someone help me out. This is the problem is you ask a question like that and now I have to remember the numbers. But yeah, look, in general, certainly they're top 10 in the NFL, top 7, something like that, if not top 5. They're very good.
Right. So I think that because the Titans are not a name brand NFL team like the Packers or the Cowboys or what have you, that puts them at a disadvantage. I mean, there are teams that are far worse than the Titans who have more name brand recognition.
The Bears.
That's exactly where I was going. Like the Chicago Bears. I mean, the Bears are bad, but they'll be on TV because they're the Bears.
Yeah, but see, so that's two. I still think that's two different things too, and I don't want to get too far into this before we get to the reason we're losing.
I understand your point, though.
You're talking about attention. Like, for example, the Cowboys. I totally buy into the idea that the Cowboys can be great, anything in between. They're going to be talked about because ESPN or whoever
right.
knows.
I think they go hand in hand, though.
Move the needle.
I think they go hand
some,
in hand.
Some, but you know what? There are other teams. Here's the thing. I think the reason I dismiss it a lot is because, for example, last year, I think the Titans got talked about a ton. The Titans got picked. Primarily, they were the favorite to win the AFC South. They were talked about a ton because Julio Jones was coming in. It was Derrick Henry coming off 2000. I think last year, somewhat debunk the idea that no matter what, just because it's the Titans and it's the markets as whatever, that they're going to be ignored. There are other teams. I mean, you can find – look.
The Titans, by the way, are 30-13 with Ryan Tannehill as the starter.
Yeah, that's awfully good. I mean, look, the Ravens I mean, that's a newer – I know that's the Browns organization initially, but, I mean, that's a – newer brand. They've had very good teams at times. I'd say some boring teams. They got plenty of attention once the Lamar Jackson elevated and turned them into an incredibly exciting brand of football, right? I mean, there's an example of not the Packers, Steelers, Cowboys, not a huge market, but although I guess it depends on if you want to consider that part of the DC market. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that in the league, if you have something exciting to offer, that people will find you. Now, I think the Titans have suffered somewhat from, like, style, you know, mm-hmm. over the years. But I think last year kind of debunked it. But I think we're going to go right back this year to everybody's going to pick the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
And Titan fans are going to be upset. And they're not going to be talked about a lot. And in the meantime, I think they are underrated for what they are. I think they're possibly underrated in this discussion that you brought up. So this is ESPN Insider. This is the author is, help me out,
Scott Spratt,
who
works for Football Outsiders.
Yeah, Football Outsiders guy. It's a really interesting idea, which is basically the NFL teams ranked by their players under 25 years old.
Yes.
So you're young and relatively inexpensive core of players. Every team has to have a very good core of players in this category. And the Titans rank?
31st out of 32.
Who's 32?
The Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, well, and so first of all, this doesn't necessarily speak to team quality. You're talking about the one seed from last year.
You're talking about the Super Bowl champion
from last year, and we know what the Rams have been doing.
They've been trading away draft picks for proven veteran talent. I don't know the next time that the Rams have a first-round pick. I don't remember the last time the Rams had a first-round pick.
Right. So bleep them picks, all that stuff. But it's interesting. So what they do in this Scott does in this particular exercise is he lists blue-chip players that fit. Again, this is under 25. So if you're 25, you've moved on, right?
Yes.
So I think it's a little bit deceiving. I mean, if you read this quickly, and if you're a Titans fan, you're like, oh, my God, they've gotten too old. They don't have good young talent. Where is this thing going? Now, they have been in a go-for-it mode. They've done things like trade pick. They've traded for Julio Jones. They've done things like, you know, go after Jadeveon Clowney. But I'm surprised, first of all, the one blue-chip player they list is Treylon Burks.
Yes.
That's very interesting. Notable, they talked about graduates. Well, go ahead and read the segment there about A.J. Brown, which I found is interesting.
Okay, so they now I have to find it again. So the one blue-chip prospect that was listed for the Titans was Treylon Burks, and the notable graduates, the players that no longer qualify for this list, include A.J. Brown, Jeffrey Simmons, Nate Davis, David Long, Tyre Tart, and Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. And this was from the article, quote, "The Titans' decision to trade star receiver Brown to the Eagles and replace him with a rookie is a big risk. But for the purposes of the under 25 rankings, it was the main reason the Titans avoided last place. Brown turned 25 at the end of June and does not qualify for this year's list." And then the author goes on with some analytics about Burks at Arkansas. But basically, the fact that they traded a player who was not going to be on this list and drafted a younger player who was, according to the author, was the only thing that prevented the Titans from having the quote unquote worst under 25 core.
So the essentially unknown unknown of Treylon Burks actually benefits them because A.J. Brown has moved to the older tier. I mean, you have to draw a line somewhere. So here's the thing. So the people who wouldn't qualify, okay, let's say even if A.J. Brown were on the team, but A.J. Brown, Jeff Simmons, David Long, Nate Davis, Tyre Tart, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, these are some examples of, you know, good young players again, take Brown out, but all those other guys are, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, obviously great young player. Other guys, good young players who are still young. But yes. I mean, look, the cut line is a cut line. But let's just, even in the confines of this cut line, I think that this is a little bit misleading. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why one position in particular is really could potentially put the Titans in a very different spot a year from now in these rankings. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook Live every day here on Robbie and Rex Show. Our video streaming is brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. Welcome back in. Joe Rex Show, Adam Vingan, for Robbie Stanley, Michelle Konezovic, intern Hanley. Talking Titans, talking young Titans, and how per one writer and one analysis, things don't look so good. Here's, first of all, I broke down two categories that sort of, well, one, I think, contests this, and one shows you why it may not be as bad as it seems. First of all, I think two players in particular, Adam, are underrated in this exercise.
All right.
One I really feel strongly about, and that is Amani Hooker.
Okay.
Amani Hooker is under 25. Let me get his exact age. I believe he is 24. He qualifies for this, and yes, he is 24. And I believe that last year, I think that he should be counted as a blue chip player. I think Hooker, Byard, has a chance to be as good as any safety combo in the league this year. And Hooker, frankly, last year exceeded what my expectations were for him. I think that people are maybe a year behind on him. Maybe a year from now, that'll be rectified. But he's really good. He should be considered a blue chip player. And the other guy that I would put there, and he mentioned him, but I think it's accurate that he's been hurt and banged up and all that stuff. But Christian Fulton is another. He's close. He's on the fringe in terms of being considered a blue chip player at under 25. But I thought he had a good enough year last year, and he overcame the injuries largely. And he had one. He missed some time, but for the most part, had a very good second year. So those would be my two guys. Now, possible high-value players, okay? These are players who have a chance to brighten this outlook considerably. And there's different levels here, okay, in terms of, okay, let's someone who already is on that path, I believe, Elijah Molden. Now, he has missed a ton of camp. But I think that he's a starter for this team in the slot, and I think he has a chance to – he's got to get healthy. He's got a chance to be very good this year. And I think he was an overall encouraging rookie year. Rough start. He got – you know, the Cardinals took advantage of him. He had some rough moments early in the season. Got benched, came back, got better. I think he's got a chance to be very good. Then a lot of other Aaron Brewer is another player I would look at. I think he's going to start this year. And we'll see how good he is, but I think there's a lot of encouragement with him. Others, of course, the right tackles, Dylan Raidens and Nicholas Petitfrere, are either or both going to become very good players. Rashad Weaver, do not sleep on Rashad Weaver and what he could be for this team on the field. Kyle Phillips, rookie coming in. Malik Willis, rookie coming in. Second-year player, Racy McMath, I think one of the stories of camp. And then, of course, another rookie, Roger McCreary. And a second-year player, who, to me, one of the stories of camp, Caleb Farley. If enough of those things break your way, this looks a lot better for the Titans. Also, let's see who we just talked about. Christian Fulton, Roger McCreary, Elijah Molden, Caleb Farley. Okay? You have a young, very inexpensive, and I think potentially very good corner group this year. I think potentially you could be looking at the best corner situation for the Titans in a long time across the board. And, by the way, John Robinson talked about McCreary and Farley in particular on Sirius XM. Here's some sound from John Robinson, Titans GM.
Yeah, I mean, I think Caleb has made some plays for us. He's done some really good things, and there's still some things that he needs to clean up, but he's moving well. He's a bigger corner with fluid hips and good speed and great length. But some things that he's got to, you know, certainly continue to improve on. But he's working at it. And Rogers has come in and just covered his guy for the most part. He's given up, you know, a couple here or there. But for a younger player to be playing, you know, two spots, he plays inside, he plays outside, and learning the calls. You know, I haven't seen a whole lot of busts from him as far as for not being where he's supposed to be. When we ask him questions in a squad meeting, he answers them. He answers them confidently and correctly. So that's impressive. You can tell that he's immersed himself in the playbook. He's studied, and he's been really, really sticky in coverage. So excited to see him continue to progress.
That was John Robinson on Sirius XM, you know, talking about these corners. And a lot of encouragement. To me, that's where the most encouragement is because, look, Adam Petit, Frere, Dylan Radins, I don't know. And Racy McMath, good story in camp. What does it mean on the field this year? I don't know. And I think Aaron Brewer, we're going to find out. Have no idea if Malik Willis is going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL at this point. I do think Rashad Weaver is going to – you're going to notice him this year. I do believe that. But when I lay these things out, do you think any differently? Do you think that – I guess maybe things aren't as bad as this particular piece makes them seem?
Well, I think the issue that the author took with some of the players that you mentioned is just because there isn't perhaps enough film, so to speak, or enough of a sample to sway his opinion. He mentioned Christian Fulton and the fact that he has missed 14 games in two seasons with myriad injuries. He mentioned Caleb Farley tearing his ACL last season and missing the rest of the year, and also the concerns coming out of college injury-wise. He mentions Imani Hooker as well, becoming a starter for the first time in his third season. And he mentioned Roger McCreary and said, quote, he might need time to adjust to the NFL with his smaller 5'11", 190-pound frame. So there is something to be excited about with a lot of those players in the secondary. I just think that for the purposes of this particular ranking, there just isn't enough of a sample at the NFL level to sway. And then again, at the same time, Treylon Burks has yet to play an NFL game, but he was a highly touted draft pick and among the first receivers off the board in the first round. So I think to your point, there is a lot to like about what the Titans have in that under 25 class. I think this season will go a long way in determining, you know, just how impactful those players can be, Fulton, Farley, Hooker, McCreary, et cetera, you know, in the long run. But I just think they're, for those players specifically, I just think that they're, you know, a full season of work will do them good in this particular regard.
Yeah, well, yeah, look, of course there's some unknown here. Totally understandable. And he did a good job of accounting for different guys. I actually kind of agree with Liam on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Says 25 is an arbitrary cutoff, should have weighted it by age. And you could do that too. I mean, and we've seen that with some of these things, right? Just, I mean, you go like average age and you can weight it rather than just say, here's the line. What are you on this side of the line? What are you on that side of the line?
There is an algorithm that they came up with, but it is quite complicated. The author lists what factors go into it, but I think it would be it's a long list.
But there's still a line at 25.
Yes, and for context, the number one team on this list is the Dallas Cowboys, and the blue chip players are Micah Parsons, Trevon Diggs, and CeeDee Lamb. So you have, you know, all pro / pro bowl caliber players at three incredibly important positions, wide receiver, cornerback, and linebacker. So that's just for context as what this algorithm says the best team in terms of the under 25 core.
Yeah. And look, I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know if the Titans have guys who are going to become that. Another guy I probably should have mentioned is another rookie, you know, Hassan Haskins, who I think has looked good. You know, we'll see what his role is this year, and who knows down the road. Of course, you know, running back could look different for the Titans before too long. Although I see no evidence that, you know, that they're going to have to change it. But that's the thing too. If you look at the Titans by, you know, by definition, especially at running back, you know, they're old. You know, I mean, Derrick Henry is now into territory where you expect players at that position to fade, but I think Derrick Henry is going to be really, really good this year as long as he can stay healthy. So, you know, the Titans, I mean, apart from this piece, when you think about the Titans being like an old team, middling team, young team, I mean, I think usually, first of all, you're going to think of the quarterback, right?
Yes. And you look at, you know, you look at the other teams on this list and look at their quarterback situation. I mean, the number two team on this list is the Chargers, and they have Justin Herbert. You know, that changes
things. You
gotta
love those QBs on rookie deals.
Yeah, that changes a lot of things. You know, the Jets are number three on this list, and they've got Zach Wilson, among others, on that list. A lot of players they've recently drafted. So it is interesting to see how it. You know, as you said, you would think that the worst team on this list would be a bad team. No, they're the defending champions that have made a conscious effort to trade away draft capital at all costs. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Titans are not in as bad of a place in this regard as this article could make it seem.
Especially with the guys who just, again, like Simmons, Long.
Right.
NWI.
They were
Davis.
19th on the list last season. They were 19th on this list last season.
Yeah.
So losing Brown, on this list at least, losing Brown, losing Simmons, you know, that dropped their number down specifically. You know.
So now this made me think about next year. And I know we've got it's a preseason game coming up tomorrow. And this year's team is taking shape. There's so much to find out. But this made me think about next year. What might the Titans look like? Who on the horizon may be looking at their last year with the Titans, even though their contract doesn't stipulate it's their last year. So I'm going to give you a little projection for the 2023 Titans coming up next. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3, The Game Nashville app, Hillside Medical Game Studio. You know, I got to tell you guys, I talked yesterday about the Nikes that I got in the early 80s, the blue stripe, like some of the original Nikes. Still a fond memory. We were all kids once. And so everyone who's been there knows that showing up that first day of school in new clothes, new shoes, ready to go, it's a big deal. It was a big deal then. It's a big deal now. There are thousands of children in Middle Tennessee who are going to be embarrassed on that first day because they don't have a decent pair of shoes to wear. We want to change that. Souls for Music City is our cause. Please consider joining us with a simple $20 donation. That's all it takes to put a new pair of athletic shoes on the feet of a homeless child in Middle Tennessee. Just text DONATE to 615-737-1025 right now. Help make a difference in the life of a single child. That's DONATE to 615-737-1025. Thank you for your kindness.
I just want to say, before we continue our conversation on the Titans' young core, I was thinking about this yesterday. I was like, you seem like a British Knights guy. You were talking about Nikes, your first pair of Nikes. You seem like a British Knights guy.
I did not get into the BK.
No,
no BKs. I had a lot of friends, especially right around, you know, like 9th, 10th grade, there was a big BK movement. I never went there. I'm pretty loyal to Nike.
I am too.
But Adidas also.
How about Reebok pumps? Did you have any pumps?
I did not have pumps. I did have black Reebok basketball shoes, but they weren't pumps. But mostly Nike. The thing is, like, I never have bought a pair of Jordans, never will. Not a fan of Michael Jordan, as you may know.
You're crazy.
What do you mean I'm crazy? I didn't like him. He played against my team. But he did finally beat him after, you know, even though he finished 1-3 against him in the postseason. But I don't know. I just never got into the Jordans thing. It's amazing now. He had a friend who just bought his kid Jordans for like a birthday for a few hundred bucks. Like, you know, like used Jordans, whatever. I don't know what year it was, but it's like going for like several thousand dollars.
It's an industry, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you buy rare shoes and you sell them on StockX or places like that for a significant markup. People
StockX, exactly.
People will buy them.
Yes.
People will buy them.
Oh, I am one of those people.
So there's something in this discussion to take it all together and to like keep things in perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, Tennessee Titans, on this whole discussion, I just had to think about next year real fast. So I'm going to rip through my – and I don't know if this lineup of mine is actually doable, and there certainly could be in a couple spots, you would think, you know, TBD. Right, to be drafted, to be signed. But here's my – I'm going to take a run at it, okay? I'm going to take a run at the lineup next year. First of all, offense. I know some people immediately are going to be like, shut up, stop it. Ryan Tannehill, quarterback. Derrick Henry, running back. Woods, Burks, NWI, the receiving core, you know, should be intact. If it's good this year, then – you feel good about that. You know, we'll see if they want to have that continuity, but you know, the contracts dictate that they should be in good shape. Hooper and Chig at tight end. Now this is where it gets interesting. My offensive line, let's go right to left. Right tackle, Nicholas Petitfrere. Right guard, Nate Davis. There's a guy who, but to me, they should prioritize. I think they will. But this is a big, big year for him after last year. Center, Aaron Brewer. That is my center for 2023. I think that that's his destiny, is moving in after starting at left guard this year to replace Ben Jones at center. But it could be a new center altogether, a signee, a draftee. But I'm going to go with Brewer. Left guard, Dylan Radins. I think Dylan Radins ultimately is going to lose the right tackle job to Petitfrere, not necessarily before this season, but at some point. And I think they're going to end up finding a home for him there. And left tackle is, you know, this is the big one of the big questions. It was kind of a question this past offseason, but I don't think a huge question. But you needed him back, and I think you can make the case that now, because, again, you've got no dead money if you cut Taylor Lewan, but I think Taylor Lewan is back as left tackle at a $14.8 million cap hit. Some people are going to argue with me. It's going to take a great season from him this year, but I think he's going to give him that. And I think that they're going to find it worthwhile to spend that money to have a very good left tackle with an offense that would come back, if my projection's right, mostly intact. So that's so you got continuity. If you look at it this way, I mean, this is kind of potentially a two-year, you know, attempt with this core of the offense. Very, very different at receiver, different at tight end. Big question, though, is are they going to be okay up front this year? Do they need to make massive, bigger changes up front going into next year? And those draft picks, second-round pick last year, third-round pick this year, they've got to start hitting on draft picks. If they don't, then it could be look a lot different, a lot more different than I'm laying out there.
So what do you think that team's ceiling is, the one that you just laid out?
Well, is Derrick Henry coming off a great season where he had no injuries? Is Ryan Tannehill coming off a redemptive season where he played well? I mean, it's just I answer that with question after question after question. I'm projecting that Henry's fine and has a good season, and they definitely want him on his last year of his deal, and that Tannehill is good enough, whether he wins a playoff game or not. I mean, I think this is a crossroads year for him, but I think still good enough in combination with, you know, I'm still a little bit hesitant to believe that Malik Willis in the next couple of months is all of a sudden going to make them say he's got to be our starter next year. Now, I don't know where it's going to go with him. You know, it's early in the process, but I just think right now it's more likely than not that Tannehill's a quarterback. So I don't know the answer to your question. The offensive line I have is largely the same, other than, you know, Ben Jones retiring. But I don't know if it's going to be good. It could be a problem. It's the biggest opportunity for a problem this year.
Yeah, and that's not something you want to be a problem when you consider everything at stake this season, specifically, you know, Derrick Henry needing to have, as you said, a bounce back season from injury. And, you know, Derrick is in his late 20s, and usually the drop off, this is usually the drop off, right? This is where the decline starts for an average running back. But as we all know, Derrick Henry is far from average. So, you know, there is the opportunity for Derrick to still be an effective, even more so, running back for the next couple of years. But, you know, the injury is going to be a huge talking point in regards to his usage and, you know, whether the Titans try to, I'm not going to say limit because he's going to be on the field, but there need to be opportunities for, you know, the other running backs to maybe take some of those carries off his plate. You know, I think there was certainly some discussion last year. If you're looking for a silver lining in Derek's injury, it's the fact that those were 9 games he didn't play, and those were 9 games where he didn't carry the ball 30 times a game, and maybe that ultimately saves him a little bit, maybe. But, you know, that is a question. And, of course, Ryan Tannehill, as you said, we've exerted a lot of oxygen over the past several months talking about Ryan Tannehill and whether he has what it takes to, you know, get the Titans back to the postseason, which he should, which I think he does and he should. But it's when he gets there that will also ultimately determine his fate. But, you know, it's hard to have a redemptive season when your offensive line has a lot of question marks on it, and you can't throw touchdowns when you're lying on your back.
Yep. So defense, I've got a couple big changes, and there's going to have to be something, you know, because yes, the cap is real. You still have to maneuver your way. You can stretch it a lot, but you know, at times you've got to make tough decisions. Roger Saffold was a tough decision this year for the Titans. May end up being very costly too. We'll see. But two guys who I'm looking at who I wonder if Denico Autry, as great as he was last year, he's a little bit hobbling right now in camp. He's getting up there in age. He's someone that I'm projecting that, you know, they can get out with the $2 million dead money post June 1 with him coming off this year. I'm going to project him out. I'm also going to, controversially, project Bud Dupree out. Now, the Titans would rather him have a great season this year, which if he does, this defense is terrifying. But his cap number is $20.2 million in 2023. Post June 1 designation, you can get out for $4 million in dead money. I think that, you know, I think Bud Dupree this year is playing to keep going on that massive deal. And not that it's some huge surprise that coming off an ACL, he didn't have just a gangbusters first year. And frankly, I thought he was pretty good. And late in the season, he was probably better than that. But still, it's a huge investment at that spot with Landry and him. And so I think to continue investing, he's going to have a huge year. I'm going to predict right now it's not huge enough. So here's my lineup. I got Simmons, Tartan, Jones up front, you know, Jeff Simmons, obviously. You know, I've got Tier Tart, Naquan Jones. I think there could be a different name in there, but that's what I'm going with. David Long, I'm going Zach Cunningham, another cut. Are they going to cut all three of those guys? I don't know, but you're talking about a $13.8 million cap hit for Zach Cunningham next year, $2 million in dead money on a post-June 1 designation. I think two of those three are going to be gone. I don't know about all three. But I'm going to go Monty Rice, who was drafted to be a starter. I know he hasn't played a lick in camp. He's been on the PUP list, but I think they're going to give him every opportunity to be playing next to David Long. I got Hooker. I got Byard. Look, Byard's got a, what's his cap hit next year? 19.6. Kevin Byard's just too good. Kevin Byard, you keep paying him to be one of the best safeties in the league. The exciting thing about next year, cornerback. Farley, Fulton, Molden / McCreary. You know, if those guys are healthy and play well and everything, you could really be excited and not be paying a ton of money at that position. So, basically, it could be very much a similar team, although you only want that if you have a good season, right? But it could be. For the most part, you are going to have to make a few tough decisions with some of the players I've laid out there. There's some guys who are under contract in 23 who could be playing this year, their last year. That's reality in the NFL.
The NFL cap is so fascinating to me just because I'm used to dealing with a hard salary cap and guaranteed contracts and things of that nature.
Yeah, it is. Like, they shouldn't be called the same thing.
No, they shouldn't. And, you know, I think it's fascinating how teams can manipulate that cap and how they go about restructuring contracts and moving money around and converting it to signing bonuses and all of those things. I feel like you could teach a PhD level course in how to maneuver the NFL salary cap.
Yeah, it is very maneuverable. Steve from the Borough on the text line, driven by WisconsinHoney.com, says, how come you guys talk about the salary cap and never hear you talk about how it's going up from TV deals and how many more players will be able to retain because of it? Well, we do talk about that a lot, Steve, for sure. And it is going up at a very nice rate. The NFL is doing great. So you are taking that into account. And that's why I think you're going to be able to retain some of those big cap hits. But remember, the Titans also are probably going to go into free agency somewhere and look for something. I could definitely see a pursuit of someone on the offensive line who comes with a big price tag, right? I mean, right now I'm projecting that lineup with guys we don't know can play yet. Very possible that the Titans decide they have to go pay someone. So I hear what you're saying, and it's certainly something to keep in mind. We don't know exactly where it's going to be. It keeps going up at a nice rate, much, much better, by the way, than the NHL. But at least the NHL is also moving in the right direction now. Speaking of moving in the right direction, we're moving into an Adam Vingan rant coming up next. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you.
Ba ba ba.
Michelle remembered how much I abhor this song.
Very good. Good memory, Michelle. Because
it's awful.
It is. It's awful. I love that song. Ugh. Love it.
Ugh. I do too, because my middle name's Caroline, and you have a daughter, Caroline. That's why you love
but
it.
But she hates it.
Oh, that doesn't
which is very disappointing to me. But she hates it.
How does Caroline Fenton feel about it? Do we know?
Caroline, if you're listening, text us and let us know how you feel about it.
Yeah. Yeah, hit us up on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, or text any of us and let us know what you think. And I'm now going to turn this, now that you've got that in your system, for a little, what are we calling this, Vingan's Vitriol?
I can't recall which listener coined that term when I was in here filling in for you last month, so I apologize. And if you're listening, please text in at 615-737-1025. And remind me of you so that I can give you proper credit.
Yes, but, because alliteration is always a good idea.
Yes.
Take it away, sir.
So this is just setting up the situation. So, Joe, you are the father of multiple children, and you understand that when you have babies, vacations are very difficult. Now, I have an 11-month-old son who will be one in a couple of weeks. We went on a week and a half long vacation, saw both sets of grandparents. It was great, wonderful time. But, you know, traveling with a baby, flying with a baby, it's an exhausting experience. So you don't really get a chance to fully relax on vacation. So on Saturday, we flew back to Nashville. We had a later flight. It was delayed about an hour. So we got back to Nashville. We landed at the airport a little after 8 o'clock, thereabouts. You know, we had to check, you know, get the checked luggage. We had to get everything set up for the, you know, we had to get the car seat out for the Uber. It was exhausting. So we're waiting for the elevator to go from the second, I think it's the second floor of the airport where the baggage claim is, down to the first floor where you go to get the Uber. So, you know, the elevator opens. Already in the elevator is a mother with two young boys. I would say probably maybe like 3 or 4 years old. Very adorable. So we get in the elevator with them. So keep in mind, so there are three parents, three children, two car seats, ours and hers, two strollers, ours and hers. It's a tight squeeze. So elevator etiquette is something that I feel like doesn't get talked about enough or doesn't get respected enough. So, you know, we're in there. It's a tight squeeze with all of the stuff that we have. And there's an older couple that is waiting to get on the elevator with their bags. And typically, you look at an elevator, if it's stuffed, especially with children, it's stuffed, you say to yourself, it's okay, we'll wait for the next one. And we, it was clear there was not enough space in this elevator for two more people. So, I think it was my wife who said, you know, it's a pretty tight fit in here. And we assumed that the older couple would say, that's okay, we'll get the next one. No, they didn't attempt because they actually did it, to squeeze themselves in there like Tetris pieces. And it was only a one-story, you know, a one-floor elevator ride. But they were so hell-bent on getting on this elevator, they could not wait. And they stuffed themselves in there. You know, there weren't any excuse me's or I'm sorry's or even acknowledging the children. They just stuffed themselves in there. And it just bothered me just because of the elevator etiquette. There was not really enough room for two people. And it wasn't like we were waiting for a tour of the Empire State Building where there are 50 people waiting in line and the elevator ride is several stories and it takes a little while and you want to get up there. It was one floor to go from the second floor to the first floor to get to the rideshare area. And to top it all off, once they got off the elevator, they were walking like zombies. You know, they were walking incredibly slowly while we had our hands full with our son and all of our luggage. And it just made me mad. You know, you're not patient enough to just wait 30 seconds for us to go down, get off, and come back up. It's just, you know, I ranted about the airport last time I did this, and I just think when you go to the airport, you know, the laws of society are just thrown out the window. But just elevator etiquette and knowing when you shouldn't stuff yourself in an elevator just bothered me.
That brings up – elevator etiquette is a really interesting thing because I've been on both sides – I'm sure everybody's been on both sides of that, right? You've been in the elevator and you stop – like you're in a hotel or whatever – you're in an office building, and it's a pretty packed elevator, and you stop on a floor, and, you know, there's not a lot of room, and it's the decision of the people, you know? I mean, I always, in the elevator, I'm usually like, yeah, you know, come on, we got room. But if someone says no, like it's a little tight, especially with little kids involved, to still do that. The only way you brought it up, I've also been on the side of, I'm getting on this thing right now. I don't care because, like, you know, it may be like around checkout time of a hotel and it's a many story hotel or something, right? And you actually have to wait forever sometimes for the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, in that situation, I get it. And I've been there too. It's like, I'm sorry, I gotta squeeze in here because I don't know when it's coming back.
Right.
Or like maybe there's two elevators and one is broken, stuff like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. But in your situation, I mean, what are you doing? If someone says, and someone's a parent with a little kid, and they say, like, we're a little tight in here, I think you should heed that.
There were three, and keep in mind, there were three children in the elevator because when we got on the elevator, there was already a mom with her two young boys, and she had all of their stuff, and then we had all of our stuff, So it was tight even when we got in there. And after we, you know, maneuvered our way in there and made sure that we weren't, you know, suffocating the mom and her two young boys. You know, it was a tight squeeze anyway. But this older couple felt the need to shoehorn their way in there, and it was just really uncomfortable. There was no excuse me or I'm sorry, or not even like you have very cute children. Like, even if you compliment the kids, it kind of softens the blow.
Also, there's an escalator right there.
Well, no, I'm so glad. Will from Nashville brought that up too.
Like, and you guys can't take it.
Yeah, you can't do that, but I always take the – like, why even deal with the elevator if you have an escalator as an option?
And if I recall correctly –
if you don't have to.
If I recall correctly, the couple each had, you know, like a roller bag, but not like a huge roller bag, like a one that could fit in the overhead compartment kind of roller bag. It wasn't like they had four or five suitcases that it was going to be hard to get down the escalator. And it was just – and like I said, it was one floor. I agree with you that if you're in a hotel and it's 20 stories and you're on the 13th floor and it's stopping six or seven times on the way down, that makes it difficult. But and then sometimes you might have to, you know, be a little pushy. But in this situation, on top of the fact that we were exhausted, it just – and then when they got off the escalator, they were walking at, they were walking like I said, like zombies. It wasn't like they were in a hurry. It just – the whole situation was aggravating.
John says, that's simply boomer entitlement. You watch that boomer talk.
Ooh.
There. Yeah, easy now. Easy on the boomers. Dennis says, when Adam tells a story, his voice sounds a little like Tim Kirchin. Have you ever been told that?
No.
Well, on that note, coming up next, Paul Kuhorski on Robbie and Rex Road.
We need to unpack this a little bit later.
we will revisit, I assure you, but we PK
Am
needs
I that
to be
nasally?
Right on time or he gets very irritable. You know how the boomers get. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 through the game.